Reading from John chapter 10, beginning at verse 31. Again the Jews picked up stones to stone him, but Jesus said to them, I have shown you many great miracles from the Father. For which of these do you stone me? We are not stoning you for any of these, replied the Jews, but for blasphemy, because you, a mere man, claim to be God. Oh, dear listener, welcome to the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends. It's January 27th, 2015. If you were tuned in yesterday, you heard the beginning of a message by Nikki Gumbel, founder of the Alpha Course, entitled, Who is Jesus? We learned about some of the historical evidence, the New Testament account, evaluating textual criticism, how Jesus was fully human, and many other things about the claims he made about himself. Well, today, you're in for a super blessing, so stay with me for the next 20 minutes as we evaluate evidence to Jesus' claim of being divine through his teaching, his works, his character, his fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy, and his conquest of death. C.S. Lewis wrote, "We are faced with a frightening alternative. Either Jesus was and is just what he said, or else he was insane or something worse." I think Josh McDowell also stated Jesus was either a liar, a lunatic, or the Lord. Before we begin with the second portion of Who is Jesus, which is about a 40-minute message that I'm breaking into these 2 days, and this message can be heard in its entirety by logging on to greatnewsradio.org and stopping by our archived programs page. And you can listen to yesterday and today once this broadcast is complete. Let me also say I appreciate Alpha USA for giving me authorization to play Nikki Gumbel over the air for our Great News Radio listeners. And you can find out more about Alpha at alphausa.org, alphausa.org. And I will point out this is not Alpha in its entirety. Alpha is a series of interactive sessions exploring the Christian faith, typically including food, a short talk, and discussion in small groups where you can share your thoughts. This Alpha broadcast session is produced by Alpha International, copyrighted Alpha International 2014. And this message, Who is Jesus?, is produced by the Alpha Course, copyright 2007. I'll back up about a minute's worth of yesterday's broadcast just to lay the groundwork to share how Jesus saw and affirmed that he was God. Here's Nikki Gumbel, founder of the Alpha Course.
This is after the resurrection. Jesus appeared to a group of the disciples, but Thomas was not there. And when these disciples, who were friends of Thomas, said to him, Thomas, we've seen Jesus risen from the dead. Thomas said, I'm not going to believe that. I'll only believe if I can actually see the nail marks in his hands and actually put my finger in his side. And then we pick up the story at the end of verse 26. Jesus came and stood among them and said, Peace be with you. Then he said to Thomas, Put your finger here, see my hands, reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe. Thomas said to him, My Lord and my God. Thomas called him God. And Jesus didn't say, Hey, hang on a second. That's going too far. What he said to him, well, you were a bit slow to get the point. He says, Then Jesus said to him, Because you've seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. If somebody says to you, Jesus never claimed to be God, and you only had time to show them one verse, I don't recommend doing it on one verse, but if you only had time, I would suggest showing them John chapter 10, verse 30 to 33. The background is that a claim tantamount to a claim to be God was blasphemy in the eyes of the religious leaders, and it was worthy of death by stoning. And Jesus says this, verse 30, I and the Father are one. Again, they picked up stones to stone him. Then Jesus said to them, I have shown you many great miracles from the Father. For which of these do you stone me? We're not stoning you for any of these, they replied, but for blasphemy, because you, a mere human being, claim to be God. So that's the first part of the argument. What did Jesus say about himself? Obviously, claims like these need to be tested, because all kind of people claim to be all kinds of things. There are people who say they're Elvis Presley, resurrected from the dead. How do we test such people's claims? Well, Jesus claimed to be the unique Son of God, God made flesh. It seems to me, I mean, there are a whole variety of possibilities, but they basically boil down to three. The first is that it wasn't true, and that he knew it was untrue, in which case he was an imposter, he was a fraudster, and an evil one at that. Second possibility is it was not true, but he really didn't realize it. He genuinely thought he was God, in which case he was deluded. I think we'd say he was insane. But the only other logical possibility is that it's true. C.S. Lewis put it like this: a man who was merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus said wouldn't be a great moral teacher. He'd either be insane, or else he'd be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else insane or something worse. But don't let us come up with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He hasn't left that open to us. He didn't intend to. So what evidence is there to support what he said? Well, I guess one area you might look at, first area you might look at, what did he teach? The teaching of Jesus is widely acknowledged to be the greatest teaching that's ever fallen from the lips of a human being. Love your neighbor as yourself. Do to others what you would have them do to you. Love your enemy. Turn the other cheek. John Mortimer, who's the creator of Rumpole and is a leading atheist and has often attacked Christians and still describes himself as an atheist. But he says now he's had a change of heart. And he describes himself as a leading member of the Atheists for Christ Society. Asked what brought about this change, he said, seeing the impact on society of a generation that has rejected God and as a result, Christian ethics. What is beyond doubt, he writes, is that the Gospels provide a system of ethics to which we must return if we are to avoid social disasters. And the article was headed, "Even the Unbelievers Should Go Back to Church Today." Jesus' teaching has been the foundation of, really, our entire civilization in the West. Many of our laws were originally based on the teaching of Jesus. We're making progress in every field of science and technology. But no one's ever improved on the moral teaching of Jesus. They're the greatest words ever spoken. They're the kind of words you'd expect God to speak. Then, what about his lifestyle? What about the things that he did? Jesus must have been the most extraordinary person to be around. People sometimes say, oh, Christianity's boring. Certainly wouldn't have been boring being with Jesus. Can you imagine how amazing it would be to go to a party with Jesus? Do you remember one time he went to a party and the wine ran out? And he said, see those stone jugs over there, stone jars? Fill them up with 20 or 30 gallons of water each and start pouring them out for the guests. And as they did so and poured it out, out came Chateau Lafite, 45 BC, that is. Imagine how wonderful it would be to go, say, hospital visiting with Jesus. And one time he went into a hospital and there was a man in there who'd been an invalid for 38 years. And he said, get up, take up your bed and walk. And the man walked out of the hospital, healed. Imagine going on a picnic with Jesus. Don't bring any food. Come as you are. Or even imagine going to a funeral with Jesus. I remember one time he went to a funeral. And when he arrived, the guy had been dead for 4 days. And he said, take the stone away. I said, oh, we can't do that. It'd be a terrible smell. He said, just take it away. And the man came out, wrapped in his grave clothes. He said, untie him, let him go. Not just his miracles, but his love for the loveless, his love for people who society had written off, the outcasts, and the way he set people free and still sets people free today. And of course, I suppose, ultimately his death, laying down his life for his friends. And then his character has impressed millions who wouldn't call themselves Christians. Time magazine said this: Jesus, the most persistent symbol of purity, selflessness, and love in the history of Western humanity. There's an article in the Spectator 2 weeks ago by Matthew Paris, who describes himself as an avowed atheist. And his point was, he said, I've got such huge respect for Jesus because his life was so radical. It was so inconvenient. He said this: if Jesus had not existed, the church most certainly would not have invented him. Look at Jesus' courage. When he was being tortured, he said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. One of the things said about him in the Gospels is he has done all things beautifully. Dostoevsky described him as infinitely beautiful. Could such a person really be evil or unbalanced? Fourth piece of evidence is his fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy. No one else in the history of humanity has had a whole collection of books written about them before they were born. Jesus fulfilled over 300 Old Testament prophecies, spoken by different voices over hundreds of years, 29 of them in a single day. It could be suggested he was a kind of clever con man who deliberately set out. He read all these prophecies and he thought, right, I'm going to go through and I'm going to fulfill them in my life. The difficulty with that is, first of all, the sheer number of them, and then the fact that, humanly speaking, he had no control over many of these things. Prophecies about the exact manner of his death, about the place of his burial, even about the place of his birth. You know, if there's a con man looking through, oh goodness, I'm supposed to be born in Bethlehem. It's too late. Fifth piece of evidence, and by far the most important, his conquest of death. The physical resurrection from the dead of Jesus is the cornerstone of Christianity. And this brings me back to the point where I started. Why don't we begin with, is there a God? The New Testament theologian and now Bishop of Durham, Tom Wright, said this. And this is so important. It's quite a difficult sentence to follow, but it's crucial to the argument tonight. He said this: the Christian claim is not that Jesus is to be understood in terms of a God about whom we already know. It is this: the resurrection of Jesus strongly suggests that the world has a creator, and that that creator is to be seen in terms of, through the lens of, Jesus. So what evidence is there that the resurrection really happened? Let me summarize under four main headings. First of all, his absence from the tomb. The locus of the tomb is well known. Many theories have been put forward to explain the fact that Jesus' body was absent from the tomb the first Easter day, but none of them are very convincing. First, it's been suggested that Jesus didn't die on the cross, and he recovered in some way in the cool of the tomb. But if any of you have seen Mel Gibson's film, The Passion, you know that what it means to undergo a Roman flogging and crucifixion. People didn't survive that. A stone weighing 1.5 tons was put in front of the tomb. Furthermore, there's a fascinating piece of evidence. Would you like to turn to John chapter 19, verse 33? But when they came to Jesus and found that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. That breaking legs was to speed up death by crucifixion. Instead, one of the soldiers pierced Jesus' side with a spear, bringing a sudden flow of blood and water. It appears that there had been a separation of the clot and the serum, which we now know is good medical evidence that he was dead. But they didn't have that medical evidence at the time. They were simply writing it because that's what happened. Then people have said, well, maybe the disciples stole the body, and then they began a rumor that Jesus had been resurrected. But leaving aside the fact that the tomb was guarded, it's psychologically improbable that here is a depressed, disillusioned group of people. Look at what they had to go through for their beliefs. I have a friend called Ian Walker, who's a scientist at Cambridge. He became a Christian because he said he could not believe that the disciples would have been willing to be tortured and die for something that they would have known, if they'd taken the body, was not true. Others said, well, maybe the authorities took the body. That's the least probable of all, because if they had the body, all they had to do when people were saying Jesus is risen from the dead was to say, no, he's not. Here's the body. Look how quickly we were shown the bodies of Saddam Hussein's sons when they were killed, because they wanted us to know they were dead. Other people said, well, maybe robbers stole the body. That's the least likely of all, because I haven't actually talked about the empty tomb, because the tomb was not empty. Jesus' body was absent. When the disciples got to the tomb, they found the grave clothes, which were the only valuable thing, the only thing that for robbers to take. They had collapsed, like a caterpillar's cocoon when the butterflies emerged. And the headpiece that had been around Jesus' head had been folded up and put in a separate place. And when they saw that, they believed. Second piece of evidence. First, the absence of Jesus' body from the tomb. Secondly, his presence with the disciples. He was seen. Sometimes people say, well, hallucination. Yeah, people do hallucinate, but it is highly unlikely that even two people would have the same hallucination. Jesus appeared on 11 separate occasions, on one occasion, to more than 500 people at one time. 500 people could not have the same hallucination. And then look at the nature of the appearances. Hallucinations are subjective. They have no objective reality. It's kind of like seeing a ghost. But look at these appearances. Luke chapter 24, verse 36. While they were still talking about this, Jesus himself stood among them and said to them, peace be with you. They were startled and frightened, thinking that they saw a ghost. He said to them, why are you troubled, and why do doubts rise in your mind? Look at my hands and my feet. It is I myself. Touch me and see. A ghost does not have flesh and bones, as you see I have. When he'd said this, he showed them his hands and feet. And while they still did not believe it, because of joy and amazement, he asked them, do you have anything here to eat? They gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and he ate it in their presence. I have a friend called James Odgers who became a Christian because of this. He said he could not believe that a ghost would eat broiled fish. And then third piece of evidence is the immediate impact. Here were a group of disciples who were discouraged, depressed, fearful, hiding. And something occurred that totally changed them, so that they went around telling everybody, we've seen Jesus. Jesus is alive. And then you get this historical phenomenon we know about, which is the birth and growth of the Christian church. And it's an extraordinary phenomenon, because beginning with a group of basically fishermen and tax collectors, there's this explosion in 300 years right across the whole known world. It's a story of a peaceful revolution with no parallel, really, in the history of the world. Fourth piece of evidence is Christian experience down the ages. Countless millions of people down the ages have experienced the risen Jesus Christ. And it's people of every ethnicity, continent, nationality, every economic, social, intellectual background, from all walks of life. They unite in this common experience of the risen Jesus. Millions of Christians all around the world today experiencing this relationship. I told you at the beginning that through reading the New Testament, I came to the conclusion it's true. But I didn't want to become a Christian. I thought, if I become a Christian, my life will be miserable from now on. And I tried to put it off. I tried to find ways not to become a Christian. But eventually, I just said yes. And at that moment, I experienced, I think, what unconsciously I'd been searching for all my life. I experienced something that gave ultimate meaning and purpose to life, in a relationship with Jesus. And that was the last place in the world I expected to find it. It was at that moment it kind of dropped from my head to my heart. And I'm far from perfect. I mess up. I've got masses of failings. But I can tell you that over the last 32 years since then, I have experienced the love of Jesus Christ, his power, and a relationship with him that convinces me that he really is alive. Sherlock Holmes said this. He said, when you've eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. And I suppose what I've been trying to argue tonight is that when you look at the claims of Jesus, who he said he was, and the possibilities of him being evil or deluded, I think we can rule them out as being impossible. When you look at his teaching, his life, his character, his fulfillment of prophecy, his resurrection from the dead, those explanations become, to say that he was evil or deluded is kind of absurd, it's illogical. And therefore, the point that Sherlock Holmes made, when you eliminate those, whatever remains must be the truth. And actually, when you look at those, they lend the strongest possible support to Jesus' own consciousness of being a man whose identity was God. C.S. Lewis put it like this. He said, we're faced then with a frightening alternative. The man we're talking about was and is just what he said, or else insane or something worse. Now, it seems to me obvious that he was neither insane nor a fiend. And consequently, however strange or terrifying or unlikely it may seem, I have to accept the view that he was and is God.
Wow, thank you, God, for this message by Nikki Gumbel, founder of the Alpha Course. Yes, I believe the two. Jesus, called Emmanuel, God with us, is fully human, yet fully God. If you'd like to make a free call to someone who would love to talk to you about Jesus Christ and God's love, dial 1-888-NEED-HIM. That's 1-888-NEED-HIM. Make that call today if you're a seeker or someone that wants to know about having a relationship with God through the Lord Jesus Christ. That's 1-888-NEED-HIM. Well, I hope you've appreciated the last few weeks as we've aired some of the Alpha Course over the broadcasts of Great News Radio. We began last week with, Is There More to Life Than This? And 2 weeks back, we interviewed Helen Kaufman and the regional director of Alpha out of Chicago, Lene Smith. And yesterday and today, Nikki Gumbel dealt with the topic, Who is Jesus? Next week, we'll tackle Why Did Jesus Die? So I hope over the coming Monday and Tuesdays you can join me during Mark and Friends as we continue with the Alpha Course. And let me point out again, this broadcast is not Alpha in its entirety. Alpha is a series of interactive sessions exploring the Christian faith, typically including food, a short talk, and discussion in small groups where you can share your thoughts. Find out more about Alpha at alphausa.org, alphausa.org. This Alpha series broadcast on Great News Radio was produced by Alpha International, copyrighted Alpha International 2014, sharing the Alpha Course, copyrighted 2007. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you and have a great day and night.
Jesus is the answer for the world today. Above him there's no other. Jesus is the way.